I know, I've talked pretty much ad nauseum about how much I love Jenny Nash's Blueprint books. But now, I have fantastic and new news. Her newest, Blueprint for a Memoir, How to Write a Memoir for the Marketplace, is out now. Blueprint for a Memoir is your step-by-step guide to understanding your reader, your message, and the always-changing publishing marketplace. From finding your why, to identifying your ideal reader, and the memoir books they already love, Jenny's new book is your key to the clarity and insight your work in progress might be missing. Find it on Amazon and anywhere books are sold. Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals. This is normally the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done, and it still is, but we are deep in a series of episodes about ideas, which is more like sitting down and thinking about getting your work done before you put a lot of work into something that doesn't turn out to be the right thing. So, you know, more of the same, but different. And I am KJ Delantonia. I'm the author of three novels, The Chicken Sisters, In Her Boots, and the forthcoming, if you're listening to this in real time, Playing the Witch Card, out in fall of 2023. And with me today is Jenny Nash, my colleague for this series of ideation episodes, of which this is number five-ish. And hi, Jenny! Thanks for joining me yet again.
Thanks for having me. Always love to talk with you about all the things.
Yeah. So today's topic, last week, if you're listening, if you're playing along, last week we talked to Rachel Herron about memoir. And this week we're going to dig even deeper into this, the possibly, arguably, hardest, in my opinion, of all the genres, and in some ways it's hardest because of the illusion that it is easiest. What do you think?
I think that is very well said. It is, writing a good memoir, by good memoir I mean one that other people want to read, is, I think, among the hardest things for sure.
Yeah, and we have said a couple of times during this series, and probably, you know, in other places as well, that there's writing a memoir for publication, whether you intend to publish it or whether you intend to seek out a traditional publisher. So there's writing, that writing a memoir is writing for people who do not love you and may never love you. And then there's writing a memoir for your family or for yourself, or that is a very different exercise. And it's just not what we're talking about here.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you have just come out of writing. Your thing is to write sort of the definitive books about putting together a blueprint, the pieces for starting an idea. So you have blueprint for a novel, you have blueprint for fiction, you have blueprint for nonfiction, and they are both books that people can use to either launch a fresh new idea or go back and figure out what it was that they were doing with an idea that they have already have written. They're really awesome structure. They're not even so much structure of the books so much as they are really structure of the idea books.
Yes, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
And now you have finally done the same for memoir, and I happen to know that you have put this off for a long time. So let's start by talking about why. Why did memoir come last in this series of books about ideas that you've been writing?
Oh, I've been dreading this one for a really long time. I really didn't want to write this one. And the reason is that I know how hard it is. I know how hard it is to explain these concepts. The whole point of these blueprint books is to make a space for writers to answer the fundamental questions about their idea before they start to write. Or, as you said, if they get stuck. And I just knew with memoir that that conversation is really difficult.
Now, you came to all of these, the all three Blueprint books, after you had coached for 7 years? When did you...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been coaching for, I think it's 8 or 9 years, actually, before I started the first Blueprint book. And the reason I started them was it was so very frustrating to be a coach and have manuscript after manuscript after manuscript come to me with the same problems. They were all the same problems. And these were people trying to get agents, trying to get book deals, you know, wondering why it wasn't working, getting rejected. And it was pattern recognition at a certain point. It wasn't even hard to see what was wrong. It was just like, oh, this. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could solve these problems before people wrote their 350 pages or their 250 pages or whatever it was? And so I started thinking, well, what do we need to know? What are the things that are wrong? And what questions can we ask to try to solve for those things before they get baked in to the manuscript?
So because it goes so deeply into exactly what we've been talking about for these last few episodes and what you and I tend to come back to talking about almost every time we talk, what is it that you were seeing? What is that sort of fundamental or those fundamental mistakes that you kept seeing in draft after draft after draft and with writer after writer after writer?
Well, with memoir in particular, it's any book actually. There's two fundamental things that you see that are wrong. One is totally flat. The whole thing is just flat. And that might be a great idea. And you and I have talked a lot about those notions that you have or those situations that come into your head for a novel. And it's like a great little moment or idea or snippet or scenario. And people try to make that into a book and it doesn't work. There's a flatness to it. The idea sounds sparkly and great, but the execution of it is, there's no there. There's no depth. There's no narrative drive. There's nothing to pull the reader through there. It's just flat. And then on the other end of the spectrum would be overly prescribed. So that would be a manuscript that follows a set of rules. So you could imagine a story and it's like, oh, on page 120, we're supposed to meet the mentor or, you know, whatever the prescribed structural thing is. And they are flat in a different way. They're mechanical or there's no life to them. They follow the order that they're supposed to follow, but the person hasn't. In both cases, what I think the problem is the person doesn't actually know what they're writing. They haven't done the work of what really is this story about? Why do I care about it? Why am I connected to this idea? And how can I best bring that idea to life? They did not ask those questions. Mm. And when you ask writers of those kinds of manuscripts those questions, usually they're met with silence. Like, I don't know. You know, what's your point? What are you trying to say here? What do you mean? I don't know. I haven't thought about that. You know, and they've written 300 pages and they haven't thought about that. And so what the Blueprint is intended to do is to help people walk them through those questions and get them to answer them for themselves so that they can go back to the work or start the work from a place of deeper knowing.
So when it comes to memoir, let's focus in and talk to me a little bit about what it is that you were specifically seeing with memoir writers, because it really does. I mean, it doesn't sound easy exactly because, you know, I know how hard it is to write a book, but I can see it. It's like, well, you know, it's just a story about things that have already happened, and they did happen. Like, they weren't flat. They were exciting, or they were terrible, and, you know, and maybe, and now I'm different. So why can I not just write that down?
right? So that's exactly why memoir is so terribly difficult to write, is that you are, first of all, you're still living your life. So the story hasn't actually ended. And where you end a story from your own life can have a massive impact on what that story is and what it's saying and what it's doing. You know, you could write the story of getting married and end it 2 weeks after the wedding and it's happily ever after. Or you could take it 35 years later and it's probably not happily ever after, you know. So where you end the story really matters. So you're still living it. That's one thing. And then there's you hit on it. I experienced this thing and I changed. So I'm a different person. So now you're dealing with different iterations of your own self. It's the you as a character, you as a narrator, and those two personas interacting with each other. Like it's very weird and it's very layered. And who is that narrator and where are they standing in time? And who is that character and how are they changing in time? And what does the narrator know about that character? All of those questions, very, very, very difficult to conceptually sort out and then to execute that on the page. You know, we're so used to reading amazing memoirs that we forget that this is hard. Oftentimes mm-hmm. the memoirs that get into our hands are so well done that we forget that there was any craft to them at all.
I remember picking up Educated and turning the final page or even in the middle of it, just thinking to myself, who showed her how to shape this story? I mean, if she did it naturally, that would just, I mean, because it is exactly what you want in a memoir. It's a fairly narrow snapshot. I mean, obviously a million other things happened to her and are continuing to happen to her. It is a look back from a different place that, you know, if she weren't in that different place, she couldn't give you what you want about her childhood. This is the story about the young woman who grew up in a really... It's not exactly a fundamentalist household so much as it is a pretty crazy household and was sort of working in the dump and was home because her father ran a dump and was home educated and taught that education was wrong and taught that the world was going to end and taught a whole lot of things and, you know, got out and I think and ended up at Oxford and Harvard and in a whole lot of different places. I mean, this is someone who like didn't know what the word Holocaust meant until she was sitting in a college classroom. So, you know, it's an amazing story, but the way she tells it is so perfectly structured that it's that. It's not just the story, it's the way it's told.
Well, that's right. And after that book came out, and after Wild came out, and after Eat, Pray, Love came out, I was teaching at UCLA when Eat, Pray, Love came out, actually, and it was just hilarious. People would bring it in clutching, you know, this book, and whole classrooms full of people that wanted to write the exact same story, and they would, you know, Eat, Pray, Love has those three sections, and their genius title, and so they would say, but mine's going to be, you know, three words, whatever and it's going to be love, pray, eat. And it's going to be, you know, and it's just like, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. You can, in fact, adopt a structure that another writer has used. That is a thing you can do. But that the people who had that impulse to write that book were not doing the work that you and I are talking about. They were just thinking, I had interesting things happen to me too. Or in the case of Educated, oh, my family was crazy too. And we were crazy in these other ways. And that's the book I'm going to write. But you know, what Tara Westover did was the work. And that's what we're talking about is that answering those questions of what am I really trying to say? And what is the best way to say it? What is the best structure or form?
I think it's the distinction between I want to tell you and you want to hear me.
Yes. Yes. That's really beautiful.
Or from our perspective, it's the distinction between I want to tell and I want to be heard. So if you want to be heard, you need to figure this stuff out. So let's talk about, I mean, why is this just, why are we talking about this as an idea instead of like the whole book? You know, like we're talking about, this is stuff you need to think about either before you write, or if you're thinking about it while you're writing or after you write, it's still separate from sitting with your fingers on a keyboard or a pencil. So why are we talking about it like that? Like, why is it sort of above the words and the chapters and the pages?
Yeah, so all of these conversations you and I have been having have been about, what's a good idea? How do you know when you have a good idea? How do you take one of those situations or scenarios and turn it into a good idea? What is that process of a sparkle in your head to a good idea that's going to make a good book? And in memoir, I think the keys are thinking about your point, what do you want to say, and then the frame, meaning how long a period of time are you going to tell, because this is not an autobiography, it's not the story of your life. So what makes a good idea for a memoir? And I had a conversation just a couple of days ago with a client who, when I heard her idea, her book idea, I could instantly see the book, and it sounded just fascinating and amazing. And I'll just tell you the scenario, and you will probably hear the same thing. So this woman had a brother who was a pilot, a big plane pilot, who died in one of the terrible crashes that we all see on TV, and was blamed for pilot error. And the writer, the author, is a woman who has spent her entire life in emergency services, public works emergency services. So she's an engineer who understands emergencies and accidents and things that go wrong in a way most of us don't. And she's going to explore her brother's death.
Yeah, because I can see this immediately. Right? I can also see sort of the giant messy pile of possibilities that she has and has to sort through to figure out like what this,
well,
what
that's
is this?
Exactly it. So in her head, and in fact, she came to me with a finished manuscript. And so when I said to you before, you instantly see what's wrong or what the patterns are, you know, the things people always do wrong. And she had conflated two things together. It's a story of her grief and then a story of this plane accident thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so then the first question is, well, which do you want to write? What's the book you want to write? Because the two, you have to pick. And yeah, to make
or
a
if
good
they're
book,
gonna twine together, you need one unifying sentence that twines them together.
Like, or a unifying thing or something. So the work is then, okay, what do I want to write? And is this, so the danger always with memoir is what you just said. Do you want to write for your own self? If she was writing about her own grief and loss and wanting to remember her brother and all the clever stories about when he was a kid, that's not a book for the rest of us. If you know, there's, you know, because we've talked about it, KJ, I love all the grief books. So like, give me all the grief books, but give me, you know, Amy Bloom's In Love, which is about the assisted suicide of her husband from when he had Alzheimer's, and gorgeously constructed, such a poignant point, so beautifully done. Like, give me all the grief books, but don't just tell me about your grief. I don't care, right? So, you know, what the writer has to figure out is what their intention is, what they want to do, and in terms of idea, what do people want to hear from her about? You know, this is not an actual airplane crash expert, so we don't want to hear about actual airplane crash expertise from this person.
No,
so
but we might want to hear about blame and
right,
yeah, and you know how that, so that, I mean, here we are. I hope this writer wouldn't mind this, that we're sort of just, but yeah, we might want to hear about blame and how it is distributed in the, because she could talk about other accidents, you know, big things where someone has been blamed and, you know, how the urge to blame and the reality of responsibility and the way it's distributed, or the, you know, whether even if it is individual, like how that plays out, like that could be, you know, that's where she, that's where her expertise would be really interesting, but it also might not be what she wants to write.
So I'm just smiling so hard here because you're so good at this, KJ, that that's exactly the conversation that we had. And that's exactly the book that I saw when she came to me. It's like, that could be amazing. But if she wants to write this other book, she needs to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And it, her decision is going to impact how the odds of her getting other people interested in this, other people meaning agents and editors and yep. readers, and those decisions, you know, let's say that the decision is, oh, I want all the readers I can get and the biggest book deal I can get. There are decisions that you could make, but that might not, in fact, be the book she wants to write.
Yeah. So, and I'd like to back off and talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
Which is the thing about memoir is it is, I think, maybe the easiest area in which it would, you could conceivably get pushed into or push yourself into writing something that you don't want to have written or that you don't necessarily want to have out there. And I have both, I have both personal experience with that and also just as a reader and consumer of memoirs who also lives in the world of writers and meets a lot of writers. So let me say up front, I have never met the authors of Eat, Pray, Love, Wild, or Educated. So these are not the people that I'm talking about. I have met some authors of other really big memoirs that some of you may have read. And they were not people you'd want to sit next to on an airplane. Like there is that. So it's like kind of like, who are you? And, you know, who do you want to be in the world? Do you want, if you suddenly become the face of Eat, Pray, Love, and I think that's something that Elizabeth Gilbert wrestled with a lot. Mm-hmm. Do you want people coming up to you and interacting with you about that? You know, do you want people crying on you and telling you, you know, if you're the author of Wild, do you want to hear everyone else's story of losing their mother? You know, so there's that piece of it. Like, do you want to be, and then there's the sort of question of who you are. Are you someone who puts all of your inside stuff on the outside for everyone to see? And if you're maybe this is not a road for you. Or maybe you could write the book about engineering structures and grief, because that would also be a kind of a step. You know, you would still have to reveal all your rawness, but you would be revealing it a context that made it clear that maybe, you know, it wasn't just about, you know, stripping yourself bare and renting and like whipping yourself with, I don't know what it is biblical and Greek mythology characters do when they're grieving, but, you know, it's big and it's huge. And
well, there is this element, and this is inherent in social media as well, a kind of performative vulnerability, like, oh, let me be vulnerable because that's how I get attention, or that's how what is expected of a public persona. So I will out vulnerable you on this particular topic. There are some people that think that that's a path to whatever it is that they're wanting. But I want to ask about your experience, because I know you wrote a memoir that you chose then not to publish. What was that about, this aspect, or was that, what was that about?
That was actually a different question of not wanting to. I hadn't thought about either the performative aspect of it. Anyway, so yes, I wrote, my first book was a book about reading with babies and toddlers and twos, and I wrote it with Susan Straub, and it was great. And then, and it's still out in the world. It's got book lists, and it's very lovely. And then I was really deep in sort of the throes of parenting and also of adoptive parenting and the complications thereof. And I wrote a memoir about the experience of forming your family in that particular way. And anyone who is a part of any adoption knows that they start with that. It's not a happy story. That doesn't start in a happy place for at least one member of the, you know, adoption group. And I don't know. So I'd written an entire book about this, that, and you know, I'm dancing around it in part for the same reason that I ultimately decided not to publish it. So I wrote it. I wrote a proposal. I met with agents. I got an agent. And then I took a deep breath and I thought about it and I realized that to publish this would be to permanently alter my relationship with my family members. And I didn't want it. I just wasn't willing to do it. And that does come back, I think, to the fact that I am not a person who will strip my emotions bare for you on, and you know, on a long flight from New York to Los Angeles. I've never for a moment regretted that decision. It was the right call. And it could have been, you know, who knows? Maybe it was the big book of my life. But yeah, I don't think so. But anyway. Yeah, so I didn't want that out there. In retrospect, I also now, 15 years later, would not want to be famous for having written that book.
Yeah, it's they're big, big questions. They are. They're really big questions. And it's the idea, coming up with the idea is, that's why memoir is so hard, because you're the character mm-hmm. and the narrator and the person who's crafting the book. So those are actually three roles that you're playing. And when that book comes out, you are in some ways held to more account or held judged more than writers of fiction or nonfiction, because you chose to put yourself in as the character, and it's just the reality. So it's hard emotionally, it's hard creatively, it's hard, it's hard. And I keep saying that, it's a mantra, it's hard, because I think if we can save anybody from going down that path, there's so many reasons to write memoir. There's so many good reasons to write it. The proof is absolutely there that it's incredibly therapeutic from a mental health standpoint to tell your story and to write your story and to share your story. Those things are all really true. And for people like veterans and survivors of different kinds of abuse and experiences, it's enormously helpful to write your story. And then the question is it for publication? Is it an idea that is going to be a commercially viable idea? So the decision of what's a good idea around memoir has to incorporate all these things we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's also a really big, I mean, I guess every fiction is a big tent. Nonfiction is a big tent. This is also a big tent. I do think that there are ways to come at these memoir stories that might be more appealing. You know, maybe you are the kind of person who just wants to share this and tell it and be out there with it all the time. And you are more open and you are more raw. And I think I'm saying that as though that's a bad thing, because for me it would be a bad thing. But I think that for Elizabeth Gilbert, maybe, or someone, you know, for some people it is not a bad thing. Even the people I'm saying that I've met and I don't want to sit next to on an airplane, lots of people do want to sit next to them on an airplane. It's just not comfortable for me. So maybe you're that. But if you are not that and you still have a story to tell, there are still ways to get at it. If you come at your idea correctly. So, you know, I think about Mary Laura Philpott and the memoir and essays, and that her two memoirs and essays, I Miss You When I Blink and Bomb Shelter, are both very deep explorations of some very serious things, but they are not there. They are not. She has kept some of herself in herself.
Yeah.
And if you read them, you feel totally in an understanding of the experience, but without, you know, feeling like someone has stripped themselves bare in front of you. So it's just a different way of getting at it. So I feel like it can be, you know, you can do this in different ways. Or to return to our engineer with the grief memoir, if she wrote it in that way and looked at, you know, and, you know, she could talk about the structure of grief and the structure of buildings and the structure of an accident, and she could put it all together and it would be there and it would give other people, I think, something and solace, and there would be some wonderful things there, but it would not have that raw quality of some books. I happened to be looking back at Augustine Burroughs recently. He wrote Running with Scissors, sure, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And that is a man who, you know, it really is apparently at least laying it all out there. I think what she could do would be just, it would be very different, and it'd be a different readership, but it would still find people, right?
And I think with a memoir, there, and that forming of the idea, there is the option always to go to fiction or to go to nonfiction, to really take a different off-ramp, mm-hmm. right, yeah. off mm-hmm. the freeway and be in a different place. And I think it's important for memoir writers to at least consider that for their own benefit, to make sure that they are driving down the road they want to be driving down, and or would they feel more comfortable if it was going to be a novel or a prescriptive nonfiction or how-to book? Where I think about my friend Monica Holloway wrote a book called Cowboy and Wills that was did very, very well maybe a dozen years ago, and Cowboy was a dog and Wills was her autistic son, and she was writing about the relationship between this dog and this boy, and the result of her writing this memoir was that she went on the road. This was back in the day when the road was more of a thing, talking to groups of parents and talking to autism organizations and researchers and just all kinds of people in that world, and had that incredible outcome of being able to be part of conversations because she wrote this memoir. But she could have written a nonfiction book as well, and that would have had the same result and taken her to some of those same places and conversations. And she could have written a novel. So, you know, there is a consideration around what is this going to be. I have this idea. What is the form that is going to take?
Right. So when we talk about ideas and memoir, it's just even more important. I don't know. It's always important, but you have to know what it is that you're trying to write. Just to come back to the same thing that we have said in every single episode over and over again. And also, maybe you'll write it one way. Like, you may not be able to save people from that one when it comes from to memoir. And also, you might not even want to save them. Like, I think in a lot of cases, it's good to write the therapeutic version and then sit with it. Which is so hard because we're on such a hurry and we want to share our words now. We want to be famous right this minute. And also, we'd like to get some money. But to write the therapeutic version, sit with it, and then figure out what you want it to be in the world with both editors and people who are looking at your words, but also with people who know you, who are in your life, who will talk to you about it from a perspective of how it's going to change you and who you are in the world, because that And we've talked about this with nonfiction before, that you could get pushed into writing something that later you're like, dang it, I can't believe I'm spending 2 years of my life on, you know, the Salem witch trials. Nobody wants to write that.
I had a client at the very beginning of my book coaching career who wrote, he wanted to write, oh my gosh, it was so good, KJ. He wanted to write, he was a admissions officer at an elite private school.
I want to read that already.
He had a nervous breakdown. That's what he called it back in the day anyway. And he gave it all up. He walked away from that job to become a poker player. So like it was this thing. Great story. And he wanted to write it. This was the kicker. He wanted to write his memoir according to admission essay prompts that the colleges give. And I actually just heard a book come out just last week that was the same idea. So back in the day, this was going to be an idea, his idea. And he wrote it, and it was absolutely just amazing, heartbreaking and brutal. And it was all about these insane parents and the insane pressure that these kids were under, and that pressure reflected back on him. So he landed his dream agent that is a very big deal. He had a dream publisher that I can't say very much about because it will identify who that was. But it was a very particular situation that he wanted, that he got. And everything was lined up. He had the agent, he had the publisher, he had the money. It was unbelievable. And then they said, we want you to dish a little more about the admissions policies at these colleges and the practices at these colleges. We want you to name names. We want this to be the juicy, gossipy book that it could be, because he did not go down that path, but it was clear he could have. Mm-hmm. And once it was all done, they said, and that's the path we want you to go down. And he said, oh, I'm not writing that book. And he walked away from all of it.
Wow.
He walked away from all of it, and he never brought that book out. And I think about that book often because it was so good. And I've been in contact with him a couple of years ago. I said, do you ever think about trying again or coming back again or doing that? And, you know, he says, no, that ship sailed. It was a done deal. But that's a perfect example of you can be pushed. And if you're not clear on your boundaries and what you want and what you don't want, that is what the marketplace would want.
Yeah.
Give us the yep. gossipy, juicy.
And that's a nice version of it, in which he hasn't injured his own mental health for this. But I think that there are some people I could point to that have published things that were really forthcoming about their mental health or their struggles or their experiences with other people that have damaged themselves. You know, they got the acclaim that they wanted, but they either damaged themselves or they damaged their relationships in ways that they might or might not have chosen. I mean, you can't speak to people, but I think that's a great example of being pushed. So if you only leave it to the potential people who could make money, if you tell your very dark story about some, you know, abusive or you know, molestation or those are the things that leap to my mind, you might end up doing something that is not the thing that you want for your life.
Yeah, it's true. I want to briefly mention, because it's funny, we're talking here about my blueprint for a memoir book, and I actually don't discuss these issues in the book on purpose. I'm talking about before the idea, but there are some books that do an exceptional job, and I just want to mention those. I love Body Work by Melissa Phoebos is incredible on this particular topic. She wrote the book called Whip Smart, the memoir Whip Smart, about being a dominatrix, and she talks a lot about the erotic and writing the erotic, and that book Body Work is incredible on this topic. And also, it must be said, Mary Carr's book The Art of Memoir, really good on this topic. and Beth Kephart's Handling the Truth, exceptionally good on this topic. So if somebody listening wants to dive deeper into, do I want to be a memoir writer? How might this impact me and the people I love? Those are the books I would point them to. They're really good.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's leave that. But before we end this discussion, I want to talk about something that is really, I want to go meta about the writing of the blueprint for a memoir, because you didn't want to write this because it was going to be hard, which is exactly what you're telling people to do, which is do the hard thing. So can you talk about your own experience of having to break through your own resistance to figuring out what this book really had to be and making it that?
Yeah, it is very meta, and it was a fascinating process because I was in this unusual situation of really truly not wanting to do it, and also knowing that it was the best next move for me. A lot of people asking for this book. I have a big community of book coaches who use the blueprint in their practices. It made a lot of sense for my career to write this book. I'm also going to be launching a certification in memoir in 2024. So it sort of had to happen. And I felt really painted into a corner. I didn't want to do it. I did know it was going to be hard. I don't have time. All the things that everybody always says. And how I got through that resistance was, to be perfectly honest, I paid for somebody to push me through it, which is I hired a book coach and I told her, your job is to get me through this. I don't want to do it. And your job is to get me through it. And this was Barbara Boyd, who we've had on the show before last summer in our blueprint series that we did. And she was so good at her job. I actually did a blueprint for the blueprint, which was funny. So it's asking, why do you want to write this book? And, you know, all those questions. And what she did that was so great was in all the places where I was like, well, I don't want to write this book. Or, you know, when I was giving my whole doubt and resistance spiel, she did not come back like, oh, yes, you do. Or it's going to be great. She came back with, I know. And you can also, I also know that you can do it. She was just very straightforward. She met me where I was. She met me in that place where I was. And she also said this thing that was incredibly powerful, where she said, if you just start doing the work, it will build its own momentum. And I thought, okay. And I did. I just started doing the work, and it did. It built its own momentum, and it built its own life energy and all those things. And you know, we talk about this a lot, that there's beauty in the work, that it's hard. Like we always sit here saying, don't do it. It's so hard. Or like, be ready for all the hardness. But there's beauty in that hardness. And I think that I have come to believe that in a lot of ways, it's what we really want. It's what writers really want, is the hard work. You know, we may say we want the Oprah moment, or we may say we want the, you know, the money and all those things, which are good. We do want them. I'm not saying we don't, but being engaged in something that you care about, that's hard, and trying to sort it out and work it out and figure it out, and what's right and what do I believe and what do I want to say and what's the point and all those questions, there's nothing like it. And so the process builds its own energy and heat, and it did that for me. And I didn't ever with this particular book feel like, woohoo, this is so fun, I love it, you know, like now I've got it. Like I never felt that, but I felt like at peace and at ease, and that what I was writing was good. And now that I am done, I feel like, oh, this is great. Like, I'm really pleased now that it's all over, but none of it was a good time.
It is the best. I mean, I've read all three of your blueprint books, and it's the best. It's the best one. I mean, I would read it. I would suggest that you read it even if you're not writing memoir. Like, it's just, it's a really, it's, This says more about this process of figuring it out, why it is that you want to do the thing that you do, than any of the others, even than any of the others do. So I just,
well, thank
I
you.
I loved it.
I hope that one gets better at what we do, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. And then one tries something new, and yeah.
Yeah, and then you have another idea, and you do that idea, but it all starts with a good idea, which is why we're saying spend the time on that idea and getting it right. And you know, even with this book, it might have seemed obvious what my point was. Like, my point is to help people do the work before the work on a memoir. But the subtitle of this book is How to Write a Memoir for the Marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I came to that point through this hard work of why do I want to write this book? What other books are out there helping memoir writers? What do I have to say? All of those questions. That's the idea, playing with the idea part of landing on what really is my idea and what really do I believe? And that's how we come to something that is effective, is when we ask ourselves those questions.
And what's so funny is that's where we started. And that's so typical of everything, which is that you beat your way through to figuring out what it is you really want to do. And then you start from there. And, you know, whether you do it by writing a whole thing or by going through this process or whatever. And then it seems obvious because it's the core, like, because you found it. Like, it seems obvious. Of course, you were writing about, you know, like, we started there, that there are two kinds of books and one is the end. But it's never obvious until suddenly it's obvious.
Well, that's what we hope for our listeners, is that they do all this wrestling with their idea and come to the place that's right for their book.
And it's obvious. Yay. All right. Well, this was fantastic. Thank you. Another great episode. And there's more, a little more to come in this series of idea episodes. And you can also go back. And if you've come to the end of your idea and you know what you're doing, you can go back and work through the series of blueprint episodes, and I will put that link in the show notes as well. And so I'll just say, find us in all the places, and until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
I know you love Serena Bowen, but have you read Serena Bowen? If you haven't, you should. First off, because her books are killer fun, and secondly, because everyone is a masterclass in pacing, characterization, and plot. And if you think plotting romance is easy because, quote, we know what's going to happen, unquote, then call me again after you've tried it. Her latest is The New Guy, but if you're new to her world, I strongly recommend Brooklyn Air. Bet you can't stop with just one. Find out more at serenabowen.com.